Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Taboo Role-Playing, and we dabble a little bit in net neutrality. For more information about the links and the news we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Yeah, leave it alone, man. Leave it alone. Let it go.
Yeah. Guess what?
What?
We're rolling.
Oh!
Welcome, everybody.
Hello, my geeklings.
I guess it's another episode of Geeks On.
Yay!
That's right.
It's time to put on makeup. It's time to light the lights.
You just
it's
look like that.
It's time to get things started.
You look just like that big blue guy when you did that.
I try.
With the ears?
That's why I wear the costume.
Ah.
I'm a furry today.
The bottom rung of the geek world.
Isn't that, hey, is that
Peter's right here, and he can't take that off.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Don Marshall. I am a video game professional and a writer and living here in Hollywood, and I am a geek.
Hi, I am Matt King. I am actor here in Los Angeles, and I, too, am a geek.
Hi, I am Peter Robinson, and I am here in Los Angeles. I am a screenwriter, and I am a geek.
And my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a filmmaker and graphic designer here in Hollywood, and I am also a geek.
Woohoo!
Yay!
We together are...
Geeks On!
And welcome all the geeks who are listening, and the geeks out there who question that they're geeks. I guarantee if you're listening to this podcast...
You're a geek.
Probably qualify.
Yeah, you're a geek.
You may have a sliver of geek in you.
Yes.
You could be like 1/18th geek. I think 1/18th geek and up is our minimum listening...
I think it's actually, then you get into the tribe, and we can give you scholarships for college.
Absolutely.
All right. No casino yet.
How was everybody's geek week?
I don't know if we can describe Matt's week as geeky or not. I think it's definitively ungeeky.
My week was ungeeky, but...
Yes, Matt?
I got engaged.
What?
Whoa!
Yay!
Now, obviously, you got engaged to someone who's like a real uber geek, right?
No. If you've listened
you
to
know,
the...
glasses,
no,
you know...
No.
No?
No. If you've listened to the Girls on Geeks episode, you know my girlfriend ain't no geek.
No, I actually had to slip Matt geek contraband.
Yes.
In order for him to get his fix from time to time.
Now, Wait a minute. Once you're married, then she had some like cutoffs.
Yes.
Like comic books actually was on her cutoff list.
Not going to happen.
LARPing was on the cutoff
list. Not going to happen.
And so, you know.
You're going to come, Matt.
No, I'll show up. Okay. And the comic books are still staying in the house.
Maybe you should write it into the vows.
That's a good point.
I think I've actually managed to convince Peter's wife, Tracy, to come along on the LARP excursion.
Yeah.
Really?
No.
I think I did.
Way.
I think I did.
Yes, I'm gonna I think she was patronizing you.
It's entirely possible, but I challenged her acting ability on
yes.
it.
I'm gonna
yes.
get,
I'm
going to
get
plus five vows of bonding, I think.
My wife is an actress, so that's a pretty
so
good
you challenge.
Challenge.
Okay, good.
That's good a good way
ploy.
To do it.
Well, if you know, if you were a strong enough actress to hold your own against these LARPers, then you might enjoy it.
Well, if you get her to go, I'm going to go just to watch.
It's like waving a red character sheet in front of a really, really big bull. You know?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what she plays.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Matt.
Thank you.
I would suggest writing that into your vows, just
yes.
in case.
Of
and
course
for those of you who are curious to know more about Matt's girlfriend, I suggest you go back and you check out our earlier archived episode.
Yes.
Where we featured all of the lovely ladies of Geeks On, all of the significant
of
others, talking about us.
Yeah. Talking smack well, about
talking
us.
About geeks and yeah. Unfortunately using us as examples.
So are you going to get a geek nuptial?
Will you say... Yeah, these are the geek things which I can have and
yes.
which I can't.
Yes.
I think we're going to have another Girls Geek episode where all of the wives and ladies of Geeks On counsel Kat on how to survive through a geek wedding.
Oh,
and
this is a great idea.
Yeah, I think...
Like, who gets the Guitar Hero guitar? I mean, like, if you guys...
I think I'm actually going to play a few songs... You know, because you play a song from the guitar, like, at your wedding.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to do play.
Can we play the Geeks On theme as she goes down the aisle?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Absolutely.
That's hot.
Yeah, underneath all of the lightsabers that everybody's
yeah.
going to be holding up.
Cool.
That's awesome.
I like that.
Excellent. Yeah.
Are we throwing action figures as you go down the steps?
Those hurt sometimes.
How about mini action figures?
Okay, yeah.
Little tiny ones.
Now, you know, I'm going to call Kat and tell her to listen to this episode.
Okay. I'm trying to convince her to get the Vader lighty plate, you know, in the center of her wedding gown, but
he really wants her to dress up.
That would rock.
He really wants you to dress up as Princess Leia.
I never really liked the Cinnabon. You know,
no, he wants the Chewbacca costume.
Yeah, that's hot.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about the Wilma Deering? The white...
That's awesome.
That would be a cool wedding.
Wow. That would be great.
Who was the disembodied robot head that Twiggy carried around?
Dr. Theopolis.
Dr. Theopolis.
Theopolis.
Beady, 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 beady.
Gotcha.
Hey, Buck.
I always thought he was
But
hot.
Who was the old guy? The old doctor.
Oh. He was Dr. Never got another role.
Well, he died.
Did he die?
He died.
Oh. I didn't realize.
Ass.
Sorry. I just thought he was an out-of-work actor.
I felt bad for Hawk. Like, Hawk was great. I loved Hawk.
But that was when...
Oh, that was long after Jump the Shark.
Yeah, that was the Jump the Shark episode. Yeah.
He was the shark. But, I mean, I loved him. I thought he was awesome.
When he attacks Buck's frigate and he puts his claws into the top of it.
That was awesome.
Because his ship had claws.
God.
All right.
Sinful.
Every spaceship needs claws.
Okay. Anybody have a Geek Week before we move on to news?
I read the fourth of the George R. Martin books.
Oh, woohoo!
Very exciting.
Yes, man.
Okay. So. I'm halfway through book two right now.
Oh, you're working your way back up to four?
Yeah. Okay. I tried reading four, and it had been so long since I read three, I was like, I have no idea what's going on.
So you already bought it, so you don't need to borrow it.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay.
I got Don, for his late birthday, Game of Thrones role-playing D20 system.
Oh, really? Yes.
It is not the official book, which I am going to go out and get. I have to get the book that's been discontinued.
Can you get it?
Oh, I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
You can find it somewhere.
It's been discontinued because no one's buying it, so.
No. The game company went out of business, 2 weeks before they launched it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
That's the problem. Yeah, Eagle Games, I believe.
Oh, I misinterpreted what happened.
Ooh. Yeah.
But the one thing I find interesting about this role-playing game, okay, now it is, keep in mind, it is a Dungeons & Dragons-based system, mm-hmm. the new D20 Dungeons & Dragons. But they've revamped the system, right, so that... For anyone who knows Dungeons & Dragons, when you play a fighter character, you get D10 hit points, which means 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. And then every level you go up, you get another D10.
Right.
So third level, you could conceivably have 30 hit points.
Right. Which is ridiculous.
The Game of Thrones system has decided, all right, if you're a man-at-arms, you have 8 hit points. And every level you go up, you get 2 more.
That's better.
Period. So what that means is if you go into combat... It's no matter how high a level you are,
mm-hmm.
if the other person gets a lucky shot off on you, it's possible you will go down.
See, this
which
is...
Which it forces you to think more, role-play more, try and get around combat.
This is one thing that...
That's kind of cool.
Dungeons & Dragons had this problem from the very beginning, before D20,
mm-hmm.
is that the difference between a first-level character and a 20-level character is absurd.
Yeah.
You are a god at 20. Mm-hmm. And it's like, come on. Okay, if you're experienced, you become experienced human. You don't become a complete freaking bizarro, weird character like you do in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Apparently, they still have that problem.
Well, not so much. In this one, the Game of Thrones system is set up in such a way that it tries to emphasize politics, right? Mm-hmm.
Good.
The noble class doesn't really get many upright benefits, right? It's not like you... get bonuses to hit people or amazing feats that let you jump over walls or anything.
Right.
No, their major benefit is they get things called influence points, which they invest into NPCs or organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And the more influence points you have in an organization or person, the more you can steer it. The more blackmail power you have over them, affection they have for you, anything like that.
Interesting.
So it becomes a competition of steering organizations, steering people into places you want them to be.
Hmm.
They even have rules for sacrificing a pawn if someone you have a little bit of influence in is no longer of benefit to you.
By the way, that kind of reminds me, we haven't played the Serenity role-playing game, even though we were given gift copies. I still feel like we should try to play.
But oh, I agree. Incidentally, although we have not played it, I think the books are beautiful. I just want to say again, I thought the books were beautiful.
The system's
the system's almost exactly like what we've been playing.
It is, but it's not. It's like, this is good, let's add a little hipty-dipty-do.
Well, I think what...
Okay, this
I think
is maybe what we, a conversation for...
We're being completely vague, but to put a long story short, I think when we're looking at the system, we're not seeing anything terribly unique.
Right.
Although the one thing I wanted to bring up that was unique is that everybody gets awarded plot points throughout the game.
Correct.
And
that's
you
the major
can change
difference.
The game. The you as a player, if the game master says, you enter an asteroid belt, you can say, I'm spending my plot point, and no, we enter something else. You can actually change the story,
mm-hmm.
which
cool.
is pretty cool. So
that's
anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I did think that was a good idea.
That's a great idea. But the other thing I wanted to plug about those books is they're really pleasantly written.
Mm-hmm.
They're a nice, fun, friendly read. Like, they're written like dialogue from the series and the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
So book's big enough.
Like yeah, but it's big enough because it gives you world background. It gives you lots of information about the world of Firefly and Serenity that you might not know.
I thought you were talking about the George R. R. Martin
no,
ones.
No, no.
Because that thing's like 300 pages.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Serenity right now.
Yeah, okay.
Alrighty. Let's move on to some geek news.
So, they're doing some FCC hearings on the confirmation of Chairman Kevin Martin. And Senator Barbara Boxer got up and she was talking to him and she asked him about this report that was being worked on a couple of years ago. And she asked, whatever happened to that? And he basically starts to say, well, they never finished the report.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, really? You mean this report right here? And she pretty much holds it up. And this is a report which basically what it says is it analyzes how local ownership impacts the news. And what it basically found out was that if local companies own the news or own the station,
okay,
then you get a lot more local news. Almost 5.5 minutes of total news to broadcast to the broadcast and 3 minutes of on-location news.
Okay.
So this, if you add it up over the course of a year, is a tremendous amount of news diversity of news that you're getting.
That's dealing with the region specifically.
It's dealing with your region specifically.
Okay.
Okay. Well, basically, this report was ordered buried, destroyed. At least that's what they're. That's what.
What she's saying.
That's what. Not only what she's saying, but what some people are starting to uncover, because people within the administration felt that or were trying to support big media in terms of taking over as many different
stations as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I just think this is really interesting. I mean,
that's
just
huge. I completely missed that.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
there are a few of those things that are going on right now that are really bugging me, like the church thing where they're basically IRS, the IRS is coming down on this. I think it's called All Saints Church.
Yeah.
God.
They spoke out against the war.
Oh, that's here in Pasadena.
It's here in Pasadena. They spoke out against the war. That they've spoken out against every war, against Vietnam, against everything like that. It was
no.
Yes.
No, what they did was they started talking about individuals. An election was coming up, and they started mentioning individuals.
Right.
And you can't freaking do that. A church cannot say, don't go and not vote for somebody and get tax relief.
Right.
You can't do that. A church cannot promote somebody and then not get taxed.
I'm not sure whether or not they said specific names.
There was one sermon that they're getting in trouble for.
Right.
It's because they actually.
Anyway,
I've heard both sides of this story in both versions. I don't know which.
I don't know the individual facts. I know they've protested every single war that's ever come out.
I'm for churches doing that.
Right.
But churches don't need a tax break if they're doing that crap.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, to me, churches are big business anyway. So they can go F themselves half the time.
I would agree with that completely. Like, if a church wants to wade into politics, they get to participate in the civic arena in every level.
Exactly. I totally agree. Totally agree.
That's great. Yeah. And I'd like to see that used towards some of those more conservative churches as well.
Well, that's the thing. Some of the people coming to the rescue of this little liberal church in Pasadena are the big conservative churches.
Oh, yeah.
Who don't want the government coming, and knocking on their door.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny that it's funny who the friends of that church are. It's all these people who you would normally say, no, take them off the map, but they want to make sure that they have a voice in their churches because it's a small Southern Baptist church. I guarantee.
I remember during the last Bush-Kerry election, it was not the liberal churches that were getting in trouble for this.
Yeah.
It was the conservative churches saying, if you vote for a pro-abortion candidate, then we will excommunicate you.
Well, interesting, it was in the news today, and they were saying that it was specifically because the IRS, I guess, is coming down on them hard, and they're saying that not only can they audit the church, but they can audit every single member who's tithed into that church over the last...
What?
Yeah. So what? Basically, anybody who's tithed into the church as a tax deduction is now susceptible to audit. So basically, they're saying if you do this kind of behavior within 3 months of an election, and they're saying the timing is pretty, you know, coincidental, quote unquote.
Wow.
That they're trying to specifically say, nobody speak up against this government. That's what what they were talking about at NPR. I only heard the end of the news article.
I mean, yeah, obviously the timing is, you know, the government's going after him because of timing, I'm sure. But if this was on the other side and you had a church saying, if you vote somebody who believes in pro-choice, you're out of the church, then you would raise hell. You would say this is bullshit. They shouldn't be they shouldn't have tax relief. That is a political organization, not a church. So if that is true, then the other side can't do it. It's just, you know, that's just, it's got to be down the line.
It's got to be down the line.
Moving on.
I agree. Aaron?
All right. Let's start with a little board gaming news. Days of Wonder, some of you who have been keeping up with Days of Wonder games, in fact, you, Don, bought the last one, the Cleopatra and the Society of Architects.
That is correct.
Not Days of Thunder.
Days of Wonder. It's
Tom Cruise is nowhere to be seen in this organization.
Sad. Not yet.
So sad.
But I don't know if you noticed, there was one of the cards in there. There was a promotional card for their next game. It had a big Bigfoot card on there. It was a teaser to their next game, saying it. No one knew what it was going to be about. And now we know. It's called Battle Lore. And the reason why it's called a Bigfoot game is because it's going to be about 50% larger than any of their other games. Like, the box has this, it's the game's so big, the box is like huge. And essentially, it's Memoir 44.
I wish all of you could see his little eyes lighting up when he describes this. It's a big box.
It's a big box. And you know their games look awesome.
They do. I can't argue with that.
This is a Richard Borg game. So Memoir 44. Essentially, it's Memoir 44 with fantasy miniatures. Mm-hmm. So it's big battles.
Aaron is so
fantasy
excited.
Fantasy miniatures, not collectible.
Wipe your chin, boy. Wipe your chin.
Using the Richard Borg model, which is the Memoir 44, and the Commanding Colors. So it's a great, fast-paced game. And the miniatures look awesome. There's like 17 different types of miniatures. And they have these awesome... They developed these little flag models where you can mark the models with flags to determine how good they are, whether they're kind of a green or an elite type of troop. So you can make multiple different combinations. They're also going to come out with expansions like the elf expansions or the dwarf expansions, so the game's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Anyway,
Aaron, where do you keep all your games?
I have a dungeon. I dug out a second floor and...
Was there a safe there?
No, there was not a safe there. Anyway, if you guys wanted to find out more, we'll put a link onto it. Also, the Dice Tower, which is probably my favorite game podcast now, board game podcast. They interviewed the CEO of Days of Wonder, and they asked a whole bunch of questions about the game. It comes out this November. Freaking looks awesome. Tons and tons of miniatures, big ass board, awesome cards.
Aaron, do us a favor.
It's going to be good.
Don't buy it before Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know. Give us something to freaking buy you
for
Christmas.
Give us something to get you for Christmas.
All right. Okay. It's going to be like $380, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
It's going to be like probably $60, $70.
Oh, that's great. And I'll chip in 20.
Yeah, we'll get like six more friends.
Exactly.
Get like perfect. 14 more friends.
This is not a news article.
It's not.
I am stepping away. I'm taking Peter's lead from last week.
Okay.
And I'm bringing basically a link into our new segment.
Okay.
Because it's fun.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I would like to present to you 8 important lessons I learned from 80s cartoons.
Okay.
1. From the Smurfs, communism works. For naysayers who point to the former Soviet Union as proof that communism is inherently flawed, may we merely direct your attention to Smurf Village, where everyone shares everything, wears similar utilitarian clothing, battles Gargamel and has turned Smurfs to gold, get-rich-quick schemes, and obeys the dictates of a bearded, red-hat-wearing, benevolent authority figure. Quoth Comrade Papa, from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs. Really, he actually said that.
Wow. Papa Smurf is Mao.
Now, I'm not going to read the descriptions of all of these, but some of them, you know, just I'll let you know some of the things that
I already have one in my head.
From Popeye, spinach is good for you. Though the massive spinach recall recently may kind of conflict with that idea.
Until you get E. coli, yeah.
From G.I. Joe, knowing is half the battle. The other half of the battle is kicking Cobra's terrorist ass. From Scooby-Doo, trust no one. From He-Man, it's okay to be gay. From Jem, girls rock. Okay, this was more our sister's show, but we certainly watched it on more than one occasion and learned that chicks with guitars and magic earrings kick ass. Jem is a sexy feminist living every young girl's dream. Music executive by day and rock star by night. She has it all. A bubblegum pop band called The Holograms, a boyfriend in love with both her and her alter ego, and for some reason, a foster home for orphans. In addition to teaching us how much girls rock, Jem also taught us that love triangles between only two people are often messy, confusing, and potentially hilarious. What, you haven't seen Jem?
Neither have we. Sounds like a pretty deep show, actually.
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. April O'Neil is really hot.
Yes, she was.
And Transformers. If we're not careful, robots will kill us all.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
In the most inefficient way, they're all going to turn into worthless cars and RVs and for no apparent reason.
I was driving in Los Angeles the other day, and a bright yellow VW Bug went by me. Pristine, beautiful paint job, everything. Huge Autobot symbol on the front of it.
Nice.
And on the back of it. I was like, I just got passed by Bumblebee.
Bumblebee!
It's brilliant.
One thing although this is probably a 70s cartoon, is I learned how to do the Heimlich maneuver from Batman and Robin on the Super Friends.
It's true. I remember that. I totally remember that.
Yeah. They weren't doing the Heimlich.
Oh. Okay.
Hey.
All right, Matt.
I remember that apple seeds have cyanide.
All right, how big is 10 centimeters? Hey, is it like 2 inches, 4 inches?
Joke almost just rolled right off my...
Well,
it was almost just too good to be true.
Well,
leave it alone.
It is exactly what you're thinking, Aaron.
I was like, ask your girlfriend.
Yeah. There's a Chinese man who lost his penis in an accident earlier on this year.
Uh-huh.
And received a transplanted member from a brain-dead man.
Oh, yes, I heard. The first transplant.
Yes.
I state once again, what if you woke up?
Yeah, well.
I would be so pissed. You took my what?
Yeah. The operation performed at Guangzhou General Hospital was reportedly a success, but the man suffered emotional trauma and after just 2 weeks insisted that the penis be removed. The story of the procedure will be told in the next month issue of scientific journal European Urology. Now the thing was, after 10 days, this thing's working perfectly. He couldn't pee beforehand. He had real difficulty with it. He could not have sex. He was having a real trouble with his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so they transplanted this new organ onto him. Now, the thing that I'm thinking of with this is that his stump, after he got injured, was 4 centimeters. Or, mm-hmm. Yeah, 4 centimeters. And what they transplanted onto him was 10 centimeters.
Like, they couldn't find...
They couldn't find something to actually help this guy out?
How many, like, brain-dead people are just lounging around, you know? You gotta wonder.
I don't know, but still, come on.
I agree.
How many brain-dead people whose, like, family and living trust are willing to sign away their penis?
I'm a donor.
Yeah, give the brother a chance.
Give him your penis.
Jeez.
I'm not brain dead.
You know,
you're getting married. You won't need it much longer.
Nice. Done. Wow, on the dismount.
There are some people who would challenge that you're not brain dead.
I don't know. It's weird, you know. Like, would it gross you out if you woke up with somebody else's tongue in your mouth? I mean, there's certain, like...
Are the rest of them still attached? It's kind of a fantasy of mine, really.
I don't know. I guess, you know, like, you know, if you had your arm ripped off and they sewed a new arm on there, that would be weird enough. But I guess it starts getting more and more weird with the kind of more personal organs, like tongues. And
there's this very funny... very funny book, science fiction book I read,
mm-hmm.
where this guy gets his arm blown off, so they put another arm on him,
mm-hmm.
but they accidentally put a second left arm on him.
That's freaky.
What would really weird me out, and this is not a racist statement, is if it was a different racial body part they put on me. Like, yeah. if it didn't match me, like skip, match
like
my coloration.
Arm, a different color.
Yeah. yeah, that would kind of wig me out, I think.
In fact, there is actually also a science fiction book about that called The Patchwork Girl. It's very interesting.
That sounds
interesting. It's a great book.
There's also a musical about a southern white racist who gets turned into a black man for a week.
Well, there's Watermelon Man, which is a guy who, it's a great, well, it's not a great movie, it's a bizarro movie about a white guy who wakes up black, a racist who wakes up black, and it's a very interesting movie.
I think I'm thinking of Finnegan's
I don't know
Rainbow.
How we bent into this,
wow.
but anyway, okay.
Tangential Man strikes again.
Yeah, this is the tangential episode.
All right.
Peter, hit it.
Okay, so in China, they have a new program that they're working on. Where instead of having a judge judge the person and sentence them, they have a computer where the judge enters in what the crime is and the details of the case, and the computer sentences the person.
Oy, oh, not good.
Not good. Where is this?
China.
Okay.
Now, in theory, what's kind of cool about
this... As long
as
the Chinese are doing it.
As long as not my ass in front of the computer.
What's kind of, in one way, kind of cool about this... is that, you know, there have long been people who've talked about some of the inequalities of the justice system in terms of how, say, a white guy will do a crime and get a very lenient sentence. A black guy will do the same crime and get a very harsh sentence. Mm-hmm. There's something to be said for justice being a little more specific. Now, on the other hand...
Specifically blind.
On the other hand, you know, there's something to be said against it in the sense that it never has any leniency when circumstances might dictate for something like this.
I understand the genesis of that. I mean, I understand, like, you know, where that comes from and that fear comes from. But did you see that Star Trek episode where Wesley Crusher runs on the keep off the grass on
oh,
the planet
yeah, yeah,
where
yeah.
every
law is
punishable by death?
Yeah.
No.
And they said, well, this is absurd. And he said, well, that's the law here. It makes it so that no one has any unfair treatment. We all get the same punishment, death. It's like, well, he freaking just walked on grass. He said, but we need to be fair. And you being ignorant to the law does not get you off the hook. And, of course, Picard, because it's also, I think it's like the first season of Next Generation, it was kind of poorly written. They have the, you can't mess with the planets. They have the first prime directive. And so he's not going to just march in there and shoot him out. But he makes a great speech at the end, which is justice is something that can be that really can only be determined by other humans, and you can't just put a law down that covers everything. You can't have a computer that delves out justice, because justice is something that that the humans give out, and this is not justice.
Now, I also should point out
that I submit to you.
I will submit back to you. That injustice is also something that humans give out.
That is true. I'm not arguing with that at all. In fact, there's some people in this country who probably wish they were sitting in front of a computer giving out that thing. I totally understand that.
Now, there's one last little piece to this story which I found extraordinarily interesting, which is, despite campaigns to reform China's courts, judicial abuses, official influence, and arbitrary sentencing remain a widespread concern, particularly in the lower courts, where many judges have not even been to law school.
Wow.
What?
Well, you know, there wasn't always law school. Sometimes there were just, you know, intelligent people.
Yeah, exactly.
I totally
agree.
And they...
If I recall correctly, you don't actually need a law degree to be a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, you just have to be elected.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that.
No,
but I seem
right.
to remember hearing that when.
No, I think any judge. I think you're elected, right?
What's her nuts? Who everybody went into the uproar over?
Judges have some legal experience.
Yeah, she'd never been a little
right.
judge.
Unfortunately, most of the legal experience you need is just to get through the bullshit of our legal system. It's not understanding what's right and wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just complete.
But by the same token, like I keep hearing these like judge decisions that, you know, completely throw the rules out and prescribe a completely different punishment. That seems to suit the crime a little more.
A judge, you know? A judge can judge anything. That's why you go to another judge if you don't like it.
All right.
All righty. Actually, I'm going to switch my news story.
Okay.
I'll switch it on you. Did you guys hear that MGM made some announcements about their future prospects in the movie industry, one of which is Terminator 4?
Interesting.
Which everyone went, okay, no duh. I think they're waiting to see if Arnold his
reelected
out of a job or not. But the other thing is MGM owns the rights to The Hobbit, and they would like to do The Hobbit now. And I didn't know what that meant because New Line had it before, and I'm not sure exactly what that means.
No. I think New Line – sorry. Are you sure? Because New Line had Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Sorry. That's what
Lord
I mean.
Of
Lord of the Rings.
Okay, yeah.
So if The Hobbit comes out and it does not look like – the Lord of the Rings series has none of the actors of Lord of the Rings. Does anybody want to see this movie?
Nope.
Now, I have a feeling...
I would go.
Well, let's also keep in mind...
Animated Hobbit? What is it? The Don Bluth Hobbit?
Don Bluth? No, it was Rankin Bass.
Rankin Bass. Thank you.
I love that
Rankin Bass really loved that one. And then somebody made... What was it? They made the bad... Like,
Lord of the Rings.
Bad Lord of the Rings. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Sorry.
But I think it would just be too soon after the spectacular... And, you know, now when I read Lord of the Rings, Ian McKellen's in my head. Mm-hmm. He just is. So now, am I going to want to see Gandalf that isn't Ian McKellen?
Well,
I don't really think so.
If they're smart, they'll make some sort of a deal.
Now, I'm almost sure that's going to happen because you know New Line wants some of this money. And if they said, hey, you can have our look, you can have our product design, you can have our what the elves look like, you mm-hmm. can have what the, you know, you can have all that if we get a little bit of the money. Now, if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, I don't know, I'll put a link to it. I can't remember exactly where it is. But they interviewed Peter Jackson, and they said, what do you think? And he said, yeah, I read that in Variety, too, but I haven't gotten a call yet. Even though they said, oh, we'd love to have Peter Jackson do this. So there's no communication.
Well, I don't think that means
anything. They're probably still figuring
it out. I really
don't
think that
means
anything.
Yeah, they're like, how much is Peter Jackson going to cost?
Because the original rumor I heard way back when was that both New Line and MGM wanted to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But New Line couldn't do it because MGM had the rights.
Right.
And MGM didn't want to do it without Peter Jackson and most of the cast.
Right.
Smart.
You know? So.
But what Peter Jackson said is, I'm getting busy. So if the phone doesn't ring soon, I'm moving on.
Well, that's fine. If the phone doesn't ring soon, they do the project 4 or 5 years from now. You know? And that's fine. I'm willing to wait.
Probably 6 or 7 years from now.
I can wait. I'm not that worried about
it. But will Ian McKellen wait?
Ooh, good point.
You know
it happened
saying.
To Dumbledore.
You know what I'm saying?
How old is Ian McKellen now?
He's actually not as old as
he looks.
He's
not as old as he looks.
Okay, good.
I mean, Did you see his date at the Oscars? Jesus, that man is old.
He brought the Cabana Boy to the Oscars.
All right, that's my news.
All right, Donnie.
All right. What do all of these statements have in common? Who polices the police? The police police. So who polices the police police? Police 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 police. I wonder whether the weather will weather the weather, or whether the weather the weather will kill. Buffalo, 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 buffalo.
Okay, what are you doing?
I don't know what they have in common. The first one makes sense to me.
Right.
The second one almost made sense to me, and the third one made zero sense to me.
All of these statements are grammatically correct.
What buffalo means then.
A buffalo is a buffalo.
I know what a buffalo is.
Buffalo is the city of Buffalo.
Right.
To buffalo someone
is to confound or
confuse. Yeah. I have just buffaloed you with my sentences.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
So all of these sentences are some examples of some of the longer examples of how homonyms and homophones can be used to create complicated constructs.
It's also why the English language is a big old frickin' mess.
Yeah. I hate it when people say... Because I can't spell words. Anybody who's been on the forums know that I'm almost retarded when it comes to getting a sentence out.
Yes.
That when I ask how to spell a word,
anyone
they
who
go,
listens to the podcast knows it too.
Well, true. When I ask, hey, how do you spell so and so? They say, it's spelled like it sounds. Well, you know what? F you, because nothing is spelled like it sounds in the English language. Hey, stop using that.
Spell you know, F you.
It just
F-U?
Wouldn't...
Spell F-U.
See, he said F. He said a few, Don. I mean, he proved his own point by his own ignorance.
It's G-H.
O-T-I. Right.
Enough.
So these are all examples from the newest hot Wikipedia post that's wandering the internet right now, giving all sorts of fun examples of true sentences in the English language that are very hard to believe.
Wow.
Such as... Badgers, badger, badgers, badgers, badger, badger, badgers. There's a difference between and. Dogs.
All right, you've got a link to more of these. I guess you have a link to more.
I have
more.
So many more.
All right, we'll put a link to
the link is there. It goes to the Wikipedia post. It explains all about this phenomenon and some of the books written about it.
Wow. And if you can make one that's better than those, post it in our damn forum.
I'm telling you, I love this one. Buffalo.
Okay.
I think your emphasis is on the wrong syllable. I don't know.
All right. Are we done or you got one more?
No, I got to hit you with this one, Aaron. This is specifically for you. The original Star Trek is getting an upgrade.
You're about 3 months late.
Yeah.
Where have
you been?
It's already aired, eh?
Has it?
I think it's available on DVD like tomorrow.
No.
The CBS one? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
All right.
It's been a hot topic in our forums for weeks.
Now, right, y'all suck.
Here's an interesting, though, thing about that. There's a guy... Don, your ride's here.
Cool. They're coming to take me away.
The interesting thing is that there's a guy who's done this already. This guy who did some special effects for the reissue of Star Trek The Motion Picture, he just sat at home and decided he's going to start redoing the old episodes. And I think it's called, like, StarTrekEnhanced.com. You can go there, and he already has a couple episodes already mapped out.
Oh, really?
He just did it. Yeah,
wow.
It was like last year. But now the cool thing about these new ones is that they're being redone because they are high def. So they're airing them right now, but pretty soon we're going to see them on high definition.
All right, so I'll do my two links then instead of whatever it was, instead of my lame ass news story that I'm 4 months
doing
at.
Doing links in the news segment.
Wait,
Shut
you
up.
Didn't? Okay. So first of all, regarding our topic, we're going to be talking about net neutrality a little bit later.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one.
Right. So I'm going to do a link to Ask a Ninja, who is my new favorite guy to follow around because he's just freaking hilarious.
This is after Lonely Girl 15?
Yes, after Lonely Girl 15. Well, yeah. Wouldn't you?
How do you follow a ninja?
I'm a ninja too, Don.
You're Chinese.
Doesn't matter. Ninjutsu was formed in China. I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right, keep going.
Anyway, and the second one is in relation to my girlfriend. I found a Super Mario wedding cake to die for.
Nice. Oh, we got to get that. This is a wedding that calls for the groom's cake. I've never heard of this tradition until this summer.
Yeah.
But you need one.
I want you to check out this cake because it's just...
Oh, I want it.
It's awesome.
I want it. This is like the best thing ever.
All right, so you got to put it. You have to.
We're
set
putting
up
a link.
I'll set up a link. I sent it.
Anyone who'd like to chip in to get this for Matt's groom cake at his wedding?
Yeah.
It's the first up.
Yeah, it's got one ups. It's
got the one up.
It's the first level. It's brilliant.
Oh,
it is a brilliant.
My go.
I'm just picturing your bachelor party.
Yeah.
It's just going to be wrong.
Cool.
So shall we move on to our topic?
I think we should.
We're going to do a two-cut topic episode.
Woohoo! We haven't done those in a while.
I know, because this is going to be a long damn episode.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Leading to our first subject for tonight.
The more serious one. Well, actually, maybe. I don't know.
Well, who knows?
Serious too. Sorry.
Let's see. We got an email from one of our listeners suggesting a topic for this week. I think that you guys should really do at least a segment on one of your upcoming shows about the whole net neutrality battle. It's extremely important, especially for geeks and music dorks around the world. It's also amusing as hell watching the battle between don'tregulate.com and savetheinternet.com, because it's one of the most obvious instances of corporate brainwashing of consumers in a while.
On both sides.
Mm-hmm. Don'tregulate.com is actually run by big telecom companies who are lobbying against net neutrality. It's hilarious how they tried to make their opening animation look like it was a simple flash made by a concerned person, as opposed to an extremely contrived attempt to confuse the internet users. At any rate, take it easy and keep up the good work. Rye. Now, we will put up links to both of those sites.
Yep.
As well as a couple others that I emailed Peter that are associated with both of those.
Yeah, and if you can figure this out, I think most people know which side they want to be on, but it really is not as black and white as it first appears, really.
I hope you can explain the corporate side of it to me a little
better.
Exactly.
Well, that's what we were trying to dig it up, although Peter, I think, might argue a little bit of the corporate side here because...
No, not really.
Well, you're about to with me.
I should say that actually both sides are corporate. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what corporation you're talking about. There's the people who are your ISP providers, and then there's the other corporations which are on the other side, like Google, Microsoft, you know. Matt, you're giving me some sort of blank.
Well, but first of all, we should probably define what this is before we go into it.
Good point.
So net neutrality is a reason, and the reason why it's being talked about now is there's some bills going through the Congress right now that is that has some attachments to it that is trying to make trying to get the government to regulate the internet in certain ways that certain people don't like. Basically, they're asking for net neutrality, and the definition that I'm getting so far is the freely passing of information through the internet of all traffic and all data along the internet.
Yeah, all traffic is equal.
All traffic is equal. Video, email, voiceover IP phones, all this stuff would act equally traveling down the, as some people call them, the pipes or the tubes. The tubes of the internet. And that you could not...
Not completely ignorant.
Right, yeah, the tubes. That you couldn't decide that one would move slower, one would move faster, or you couldn't charge more for some of the data and charge more for less of the data. And then on the other side, people are saying, we're about ready to have a giant bottleneck. And with all this information, including all these movies that everyone wants to pipe down, into all of our televisions, all these phones is causing traffic, and we're going to have big problems here soon. And the people who are going to pay for it are
providers.
So that's the two sides of the debate that I can that I seem to understand. I don't know about you guys, but I feel that all data should be treated equal and that I should be able to use the pipeline that I paid for any way I want. And part of the reason is for that is, A, I just feel like I should be able to do what I want to. But also, I don't want certain people to decide to limit what is being developed. For example, AT&T might decide that they want to keep selling phones to us on regular phone lines, and they're going to start charging us for the voice over IP more so that we are discouraged from using internet phones or iChat or Instant Messenger or all these things. Now you can communicate with people online, so you're forced to use their telephones. I could see them doing that.
Okay.
Or if they don't want you to, if the cable companies want to make sure you're watching cable television or satellite television, that they start restricting the pipeline of YouTubes and video that you can get online that's downloading onto your set-top boxes and that you are downloading from iTunes. I think that's a problem.
There's another sort of example of it that is a little more broadly encompassing. Which is, say, someone has a partnership with someone like, say, Yahoo as a search engine. They can decide that what they're going to do is they're going to slow down all access to Google or even block access to Google and make it so you can only go to Yahoo.
Yeah,
you know.
The example that I keep seeing used is like all corporations these days mix and intermarry, right? Mm-hmm. So Comcast, for example, is a major hosting service, right? Mm-hmm. They could slow down your access to iTunes if they decided that their parent company has launched a slightly more expensive tune service. Mm-hmm. You know, they can just block you from going to iTunes, and now you're forced to use their business.
My problem is that I don't know how these companies are vertically integrated. In a lot of cases, I don't know what Viacom owns. Yeah. I don't know all game companies. And
it's complex.
Right. It's very complex, and I don't know what agendas they're trying to sell me. And I don't like having to find it out 6 months down the line and going, oh, how did that happen?
I don't care what agendas they're trying to sell me. I don't want any agendas.
Exactly.
Or you don't want to hear that Google had to pay more for the same amount of pipeline as Yahoo, because Yahoo's, you know, got ins with somebody.
Or I don't want to hear that, you know, any big company like, say, Google or Microsoft is getting really fast internet access, but we at Geeks On are getting like dismally slow internet access because we're small, yeah, independent, and they're reducing the voice of the independents in the market.
Right.
Keep in mind, it is going to be things like podcasters who are probably some of the hardest hit.
Yeah.
You know, bloggers, hardest hit, because we don't have a corporate voice to speak for us. We don't have money.
Let's keep in mind that people are already paying. When I access the internet, mm-hmm, I am paying to access the internet. When we host Geeks On as a site, that's, mm-hmm, not free either. We have to pay for the bandwidth that people use when they come to access our site. So people are already paying. Now they're just trying to pay. They're trying to now charge not just for the amount of bytes that are being accessed, but for the speed, mm-hmm, at which they're accessed.
See, now, so the thing is, do we have real net neutrality now? Do we know that we do?
No, but we have kind of an open free market. At least they've tricked us to believe we have an open free market. Like, if I don't like how much I'm paying for and the bandwidth that I'm getting, mm-hmm, I can go, you know, for Geeks On, I can go to somebody else. And I can even start up my own. I could put a damn computer in here and, you know, pay for a pipeline into my house. I could do it myself. Well, do you guys really believe that we could be crashing the internet by making these decisions?
No. I believe the technology will adjust.
I do,
and
too.
Grow as it's needed.
I totally agree.
You know, we may go through some tough times as information expands exponentially. Like YouTube, I can't even imagine how much space YouTube must require at any given time.
Well, how much bandwidth is being pumped out of
there? I just can't even imagine.
But let's also just talk about this for a second, because the reality is that there's already a way that they can address this very easily, okay? Which is that if they start having problems in terms of things getting clogged, they can just charge more for people to access the internet, and people will stop paying. As you know, people will start having to make choices about how much
access they want.
Well, we do that. Like, I pay extra for a higher bandwidth.
We already do that.
I mean, but you're just saying increase the rate so that it's really, really expensive to get a T1 line.
Well, yeah, as long as there's competition, you know, that's just going to happen. But I want competition.
And in essence, when they raise their rates, they're raising their rates because they have to do that in order to pay for, you know, the new infrastructure that they put in, but at the same time, because there is competition, okay, because they are in competition with other people, eventually that will come back down. However, if they do what they're doing here, what they're essentially doing is, it's almost like a monopolistic tact to take if you don't have net neutrality, because now what they're not doing, they're not necessarily competing, they're actually limiting competition. They're saying, you know what, I've got a partnership with Yahoo, and I don't want to compete with Google, so we're going to make it so that anyone that uses us cannot get onto Google. And that's not...
Now, these are extreme cases, but it could definitely happen.
Yeah. It's
unlikely that they're actually going to say you can't access Google, but it is very likely that they'll say Google is not on our express highway. So if you want to use Google, you're going to have maybe 150 bits per second rather than 300 or 350.
You know, if they really wanted to, they could just route you somewhere else. You type in Google and you go to freaking to a different place. If that would be the extreme case of a non...
You see, but then I think they'd be infringing on freedom of speech. And then I think we've got them on a constitutional issue.
Well,
I don't think they can do that.
See, for me, I've already... you guys obviously remember when we, being the same age, were in college and we had full open source, and like there was like porn flying everywhere and there were no limitations in terms of what was presented. I mean, it was a lot less. There was a lot less.
I don't think it's changed at all.
Web pages.
I don't think it's changed at all.
You don't?
No, there's no limitations. I mean,
it's a little harder for children to get onto things now.
Yeah.
But. A little bit.
Oh, come on.
Are you
kidding me?
That's not.
Back in the day when you couldn't even...
I think it's a safe statement to say it's a little bit harder than before there was even a button saying, are you 18?
Yeah.
You know?
There are token obstructions. Fine.
Yeah.
Before you had to be into computers.
Wait. So you're saying I mean, I'm sorry, but that's
I understand what you're saying, that it's still there, that it's still visible, that it's still free, but there are token obstructions to a lot of things.
And there are
companies that have grown up around those token obstructions. You know,
The casual obstructions you see on the internet are supposed to be secondary to the obstructions a parent is supposed to set up on their own computer.
I mean, let's be honest. The correct phrase is token obstructions. Token meaning that they're not really any obstruction at all.
Right.
The only obstructions that you see to seeing something like porn on the internet are the obstructions that the people, the porn industries put in themselves so that they can charge people.
Right.
Okay? Yeah, like owning a credit card.
Right.
Well.
Yeah, but that's not – they're not obstructing anything. They're trying to get money out of you.
Yeah, but a credit card is going to obstruct a child from getting onto these sites for the most part.
Yes,
how many 10-year-olds do you know with a credit card?
Our point is that those are not there to keep a 10-year-old from getting that onto that. It's not legislation that's made that way.
But they work. There is actually strict legislation.
Okay. Let me just tell you that I bet you that within 5 minutes of getting on there, I could probably find a half dozen porn sites that have nothing stopping people from going onto them.
I bet you could do it in one.
I might be able to do it.
I bet you
could do it in about 10 seconds.
Do it in one.
Well, I think it depends on your definition of porn.
No, you're out of your mind. I can find the sickest piece of shit on there for free in about 10 seconds.
All right. We'll try it out in a bit.
Have you even been on a computer? I think if
you're going to see the really sick stuff, I think you're going to find softcore really easy. But for the
Have you even been on the computer?
Let's stop it, and we'll come back.
I don't even listen.
I'm telling you, let's go on to Google.
Because everybody we know who is listening right now thinks you are out of your freaking mind right now, Don.
We really need to do this as an experiment.
Don@geekson.com. You tell Don how absurd he sounds right now.
Stop.
We're not going to stop. We're going to keep going. We'll do it afterwards.
Let's take a vote. How many people say we should stop and test this experiment?
I think we should barrel on to the end.
Okay. All right. So are we done with net neutrality here? Because one thing I would like on the corporate side,
let's try and form a corporate response here.
If anybody listening has corporate hosters,
we know we're hippies to a greater or lesser extent.
I'm sure
there's some listeners out there who have a different opinion on this, yes. and I'm sure we'll get something.
And we should air them. We are going to do a mailbag. We will air your grievances if you have them.
Do we still have our call-in number?
No.
Okay.
No one called in, so I but definitely let us hear the other side. I mean, I've read about it, and I can't seem to get my brain behind the other side too well. So if anybody out there has really good arguments for it, I love to – just for me to be informed, and if you can – hell, if I'm wrong, I'll be the first to change. Well, I won't be the first to change, but, you know.
Yeah. No, you'll be the last to
change. All right.
But what I would say is if I'm hosting these things, if I'm paying for the maintenance, if I'm paying to support everything, mm-hmm. I deserve to control some of the property that I own. I deserve the right to charge more.
Right. Except for the fact that none of these big companies actually built the internet. None of them had anything to do with the network right.
But they administer it now. And it actually was. He signed the things into it. I dislike that.
Listen,
you, Mr. Matt.
Yeah, Al Gore freaking invented the internet. Right.
He may have
helped it along, but I'm telling you.
No, he signed into being some of the things that brought it about.
That's all he ever claimed. Okay.
He never claimed anything more than that.
David Bowie is the first cyberpunk.
Snopes.com has an entire thing on Al Gore never having said it.
Okay.
You.
Okay. Anyway.
This is going to be who's the biggest hippie episode of Geeks On.
While most of us would not typically support the regulation of the internet, I think that in this case, how many of us support network neutrality? I certainly do.
None of us want more the government getting their fingers in more things. Trust me. I totally understand that. But
what network neutrality, in terms of regulating it, they're not really regulating. They're kind of doing the opposite. They're kind of saying it's kind of like a...
Well, they're regulating the companies. They're not regulating the internet.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. That's very aptly put. That's the best way I've heard it put yet.
Yeah. So, anyway, I can't argue for the big the other side right now. I just can't wrap my
brain
around.
We do have a link that will go to the other side of the argument, so you guys can fill yourselves in a little bit more. I read the counter arguments and I didn't buy them, so unfortunately, I don't feel like I'm a good advocate of them.
Yeah,
you know, I usually try not to argue on anything that I don't understand both sides of an issue for, but this one, wow.
John, I have the hiccups.
Shall we discuss?
I have the hiccups.
We'll discuss that off well, mic.
Let me just say, I don't mind paying for bandwidth. You know, I do mind paying for access. You know, I don't mind. I do mind limits on access.
All right, can we move on?
Let's
to
move
topic
on.
Number two.
I think we shall.
Okay. So, topic number two. We haven't done this in a while.
We haven't touched on any role playing topics in a long time.
Yeah.
We have recently started a role-playing game that we are getting into bit by bit.
And this is what made me think of this topic.
It's a great topic.
This is what made me think of this topic because...
there's specific things about this game that bring up...
Right. We, Matt, using the Savage World system, which we were given a copy to borrow from a listener.
And specifically the expansion pack to that Savage World role-playing game, which was Tours of Darkness.
What is it called?
Tour of Darkness.
Tour of Darkness, yes. Which is a Vietnam Cthulhu genre.
Exactly.
We should pause for a moment to say thank you to Cheyenne, who gave it to us. And he is a member on our forum. So
I think he was like the first writer. Our first... Wasn't he our first email we ever got?
Maybe.
It's,
I think he was.
I don't know.
And we thought Cheyenne was a woman.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Nice.
We're sexist pigs.
But...
It's a neat world. It's very
The idea is a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Cthulhu Vietnam is a great idea.
Yeah. Cthulhu and big guns. Cool.
But because we're playing a Vietnam game that takes place in Vietnam, that takes place in a strange era, very kind of...
The Vietnam War.
Vietnam War.
Specifically 1961 and all of the lovely funness that comes with 1961.
Yeah. Exactly. There has been times that we've touched upon it a little bit, that there has been some...
Elements of blatant racism?
Well, there's been... Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And elements of blatant racism? Oh, there's blatant racism. I mean, as the GM of this game, I sort of, you know, have had the interesting job of going, all right, how much of this is just us playing a role-playing game, and how much of this is me trying to portray the world as it really was in 1961?
You know? Or as, you know, naturally, because we weren't there,
right.
As you perceive it
as
having
I
been.
Exactly, right. As I perceive
it. That's unavoidable. Whenever we do any kind of role-playing game, the world you're seeing is not a window to the past. It's a window to the past through the filter of the game master's eye.
Exactly.
Right. You know?
So the question is, can you role-play taboo subjects... And can you explore these ideas, or should you just leave it alone and just drop the thing completely?
Right.
Can you play a Vietnam game without getting into taboo subjects? Can you play a vampire game with... I mean, I guess it partly depends on the people around you, but
how
can you play a vampire...
You get, yeah.
Yeah. Can you play... You know, we've all played the campaign where, hey, let's play all evil characters. Oh, really?
Yep.
What does that mean? And when one player starts doing something that you look at him and go,
you're a sick bastard.
Yeah.
I can't even believe you thought of that.
Should that be allowed? Should that
should that be encouraged?
Right. So,
because I think it's – I'm going to go out on a limb here and say universally, all four of us are going to say it's allowed. I don't think any of us support censorship to that level.
No.
No.
But should it be encouraged or supported?
Well, can we start with the game we've played?
Sure.
Race and –
Well,
political.
Sorry, go on.
And political position also.
Okay.
Well, let's be specific. I mean,
to bring up our characters real quick, to give everyone an idea of what we're doing, we're playing a unit in Vietnam. Peter, a white man, is playing our Vietnamese, northern Vietnamese trader.
Trader guy,
yeah,
translator.
Betrayed the North. He's working for the South. And he's got.
We don't know
why.
Us as players don't know why he's done this.
Let's also keep in mind that I'm doing a very bad Vietnamese accent.
Which, if anybody walks into the room,
it's straight out of "Sucky Sucky Me Love You Long Time." You know.
Well, I didn't say any of that stuff.
No, but the content is right there. Right. You know.
Yeah. And let me just say that anyone who's heard me ever try and do any type of accent knows just how offensive I can be.
Yeah, right. And I wouldn't.
I'm not
say
trying
it's because,
to be.
Yeah, it's not because you're trying to be offensive. It's just you're bad at it. Yeah. You're just bad at it. And
I'm bad at it.
And that's why I think I kind of had to adjust to that right off the beginning. I'm like, damn. Is he just doing that, or is he just suck at this accent?
Yeah. Yeah.
Our friend Eris.
Matt told me I had to.
Oh.
Our friend Eris, who is a lovely little Hispanic man,
yes.
Or Latino. I don't know the PC term anymore. Is it Latino? I think it's Latino.
It's Latino.
He is playing a black man in the 60s.
Right.
Who is looked down upon by our white character, played by Aaron, who is a medic.
Do I?
Huh?
You dislike. Well, you actually dislike, according to the way the characters have been rolled, are you dislike Peter's character more than you dislike Eris's character?
I've been playing a dislike everybody, but I've been focusing on Peter's character because I distrust him.
Right. Yeah. But I think you're playing more of a kind of a vanilla white guy in that.
Yeah. I'm a white guy.
Now, me, Don, I'm playing
as the Polynesian.
I am the Polynesian geek.
Mm-hmm.
I am playing a Salt Lake City Mormon. Who is probably the most insidiously racist of the bunch.
Right.
I think, what was the quote?
Oh, God.
Oh, don't worry. You don't have to feel bad about shooting that little girl. Those people don't feel pain the same way we do.
Yeah, that made me cringe.
Right,
oh,
but
God.
It's not that I believe Mormons are like that. I've met very few Mormons in my life. I'm portraying a specific character from that time period in my mind, to fit with the world that you're making.
When you're talking about the lens of this, for me, the lens of this is through the movies that I've seen.
Right.
You know, the Full Metal Jackets,
sure, right.
The Forrest Gumps,
Iron Chefs.
Yeah. But specifically, these topics are always hitting the high points of these time periods, and thereby what I'm portraying to you guys is then...
It's an amped up version of everything. But what I'm saying is, okay, so, fine. We've all rationalized it in our brains.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But...
Okay, now, I felt dirty when I said that.
Right.
You know,
so,
I'll be right up front.
But
I felt
awful.
We
be doing... Okay, we're playing a game. Are we really exploring... Are we really trying to role play and exploring those things because we like to kind of... to understand how that it would be like? Or are we doing it because we have this secret desire to be kind of racist? Like, you said... why did you say that? Did you do that because you were... in character, and you thought, this would be an interesting in the game.
Well, actually, okay. Now the thing that happened, to give people context, so we don't pull an H.P. Lovecraft, and they think that I was talking about something significantly worse than actually happened.
Right.
We passed by a village, and a plague-ridden child just kept coming at us. Right?
Yes.
So we were trying to get away from the child. We walked around her and we left her because we didn't have the ability to help her. But long story short, someone in the train behind us couldn't get away from her and shot the child. He was overcome with guilt, and he came to my character because my character is kind of the religious one, right?
Right, mm-hmm. And there was no pastor within the, you know.
So now the reason why I did that in-game, mm-hmm. like my thinking was not necessarily because I believed that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was because this person's about to go off the deep end mm-hmm. in the middle of a jungle, and they have an AK-47, you know.
So you're playing the soldier role.
I'm playing the, I just need to say whatever I need to say in order to get you to the other side where somebody can figure this out, right? But
no, I remember that. I mean, I wasn't looking at you going, Jesus.
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ, cross the line there.
No, but by the same token, like when it came out of my mouth, I was like, he might not actually think this, but saying it, it's not, I don't think it's something he'd think twice about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like this would be a big moral conundrum for this character,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Okay, so now here's another thing. Are you guys ready to?
I think I am playing the evil character in that game.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What about playing gender roles? Now this happens a lot in role playing. Actually,
Don,
why are you looking at me, Matt?
Because inside Don is a tiny little Japanese martial artist.
That's great.
Playing gender roles can, when you're sitting in a room full of men, mm-hmm. probably doesn't faze anybody. You know, you think you're thinking like a woman. You think you're acting like a woman. If a woman was sitting in the back room listening to the game, they would probably come unglued.
Yes.
I would say that depends on the group. There are different types of role players that do different things.
And do you think that... and
I'm not sure what... Like, I agree. I love playing female characters.
Don't play them, however, like most of the guys I've known have played female characters over the years. Most of the guys I've known have... I'm specifically playing a drow elf with cleavage.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, my favorite female characters have been, like, an elderly 40-year-old nurse.
Right.
Who was patterned after... what's her name? From Misery.
Yes.
Kathy Bates, a female dwarf or something, you know.
Yeah, like I don't play sexy, you know, because I'm not good at it. Nobody looks at me and thinks sexy. So whenever I try and play a sexy scene with a game master, the game master usually gets pretty uncomfortable, you know?
Yes. But do you think it's healthy for a group to have players play opposite races, opposite sexes, opposite...
See, for me, I have this... I had this thought about this because I was like, what about, you know, I guess it's because the reality of dealing with racism is so much closer to me, it makes me that much more uncomfortable.
Well, okay, whereas you're game mastering this game.
Right.
Peter's doing the most freaking worst, I mean, he might as well have buck teeth and put a freaking,
yeah.
Not because, again, I know you're not trying to be racist, it's just you have a bad
I think we can stop putting that disclaimer on everything we say.
Number one, I got a bad accent. I'm supposed to play a character that barely speaks English.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So inherently, it's going to come out bad. But yeah. Are you sitting there going...
Well, he's also playing a character with an incredibly low charisma.
Right.
And he's trying to role play that.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so he's coming across as abrasive.
As an Asian man, are you sitting there going...
No, he's like me.
There's
a little... That,
there's a cringe. there's a cringe. Now the thing about that is though why would we don't talk about this in reference to something like Vampire, mm-hmm. where we're playing not only, you know, characters who thrive on killing other individuals, that's okay. That would just, you know, because that's just high fantasy. But, you know, they kill people in horrific ways.
Well, when you look at the vampire role playing society, right? The groups that play vampire, mm-hmm. you have to take in consideration there are two types, right? I know most people just look at them and go like, oh, you're playing vampires, just suck blood and stuff. There are two types. There's the Camarilla type vampire player, and I'm using the White Wolf terms.
Right.
Right? Which, they're all Louis. They're all Louis from Interview with the Vampire.
Yes.
Right.
They're all angsty. They don't want to kill. They're trying to hold on to their humanity. Mm-hmm. You know,
they're hot and drink
they
a lot
may
of wine.
There may be a massive struggle Correct. For power. You know, doesn't mean that they're nice, but... By the same token, they're not about killing people. That's right. Kind of...
They're about political control.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you have the Sabbat player, right? The Sabbat player are the ones who are saying, we're playing vampire. Let's be evil. Let's play the evil vampire. And the Sabbat vampires were the ones who said, screw you to the Camarilla. We're vampires. We're going to embrace it. And we're going to be as evil, decadent, and awful, and spit on the memory of our humanity as best we can. When I was playing Vampire, I was always a little wary of the people who were really gung-ho about playing Sabbat. I'll admit it.
Now, I think Vampire, the White Wolf game, has pretty much removed religion as any type of connection to the vampire wing,
not
right?
Not true.
Because in the new version, you mean?
Well, no, and just the like, it's not
in the original version. It was steeped in Christian mythology.
Steeped in Christian mythology.
Yeah, but so they were descendants of Cain.
They're descendants of Cain.
But
the
I read
murderer.
Those books. They don't really go into that much into like the church and all that when you're actually playing.
They really do. They have two clans of vampires that are constantly at war over the Catholic Church.
Do they?
You know,
do crosses affect you? Things like that?
Only if someone has true faith. If so you don't believe in the cross, it doesn't help you.
Have you played in a game where that has crossed the line? I mean, I can see sitting in a room full of people going, hey, you know, this kind of bothers me. I'm a religious type of person. This doesn't gel with me. Have you played a vampire game where testing religious values has become a problem?
No, because I don't hold the... I've never run that deep into a circle that played Sabbat. Right, and Sabbat was all about Christian. Catholic symbology.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know, I don't think even like I don't think LARPs, like Sabbat LARPs, dip into that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to brush over it and go for the combat game.
Yeah,
you know. But if you really read deeply into the literature, yeah, it goes into. I mean, they had to put. Black plastic bindings on
yes.
some of the vampire books
hmm.
because they couldn't show the content to children.
Interesting.
You know? It was a role-playing game that was suggested for mature readers.
Right.
So, yes, like, there were books that I would not let my mother see, you know?
Yeah, I would think.
And that makes me, I mean, I don't know if I should feel uncomfortable about that.
I actually did feel incredibly uncomfortable. I played a Sabbat campaign that my friend Dave game mastered, and I felt incredibly uncomfortable at one point. It wasn't during the game. During the game, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I went home that night, and I had this dream about playing the game. Mm-hmm. And I woke up, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, just this sort of sense of just filth and decadence and over, and it was just like, it was too much.
I gotta be honest.
Uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
You know when you play the games on, like, Xbox, where you can play, like, the good path and the evil path?
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time playing the evil path.
Yeah.
You and me have that discussion.
I go the good path, and then I think about doing the evil path. Like, I can't do it.
Now, is that because we're just wussies, or what?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's because you're wussies.
I feel stupid when I feel that way. You know, like, I'm looking at an animated character on a screen, you know, who is begging me to buy the skull of the creature her husband killed before he died. If I give her enough money for the skull, then she'll be able to get off planet with her child. And you have the option just to take the skull from her and not give her anything and
or
kick her into the gutter.
Or do something like that, yeah.
Right? I can't. I know it's just an animated woman. You know, I know there's no reality to it, but I feel really guilty when I decide to take the skull and kick her into the gutter.
Yeah. In the Knights of the Old Republic, that kept on happening to me over and over and over again. And then I played the whole game evil, and I said,
"Now is that because it's tapping into a place in you that you can't go, or a place you're uncomfortable going that you could?"
Well, here's an interesting thing. Like, I think that if I was playing a character like in the role playing game that we're playing, that wasn't a good character, it would be easier for me. But somehow, when I'm playing the games on the internet, they feel more like they're avatars of me. You know. Like, it feels like it's
really
a representation of me in some way.
Complete opposite.
Really?
But, like, when we're playing, like the character I'm playing right now doesn't feel like me at all.
Okay.
You know, I mean, like, you know, we've chosen a character that's
usually feel the exact opposite, that within the character. Even when I was playing the Death Knight, you know, within Aaron's campaign.
Well, that can't be true, because you're saying you feel guilty when you have that character commit that action. You must be feeling some sort of personal empathy with that character.
You mean in the video game?
Yeah.
Then I go back and I play the evil side, and I'm gung-ho, and I can do it no problem. It's just, for me, it's like I can't...
I can't
be wishy-washy about it. If I've chosen to be good as this character, I can only be good.
I have to make a commitment to be
okay. evil.
So I guess, but what I was just to clarify, what I was saying is that if I'm playing a character that's somewhat nondescript and they act as an actual representation of me, an mm-hmm. avatar in some sense, you know, where I sort of feel like this character is still sort of supposed to be like me, I wouldn't be able to do it. But if I was playing a character that's specifically supposed to be different than me, like has qualities that are not my qualities, like one of the things that we've done in this campaign we're doing, this character is nothing like me.
Not at all.
So it's like it would be much easier for me to play this character as like vindictive and mean and evil than it would be for the other circumstances.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys feel about genre games where these problems might come up?
Really address gender role-playing?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
any of you played a female character?
Yes.
I have not. I have not played a female
you
character.
You never have? Do you have a desire to?
I'm a game mastery type. I'm not a big
player.
But
I think also there's a certain quality that each person brings to their role-playing, something mm-hmm. they like to do,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I classify you as being a problem solver,
mm-hmm.
right? You like to see a situation. You like to figure out a way through, around.
Right. I make characters who are tinkers and little guys who fix things and stuff because I want to be able to – yeah, exactly.
I don't see you getting into, like, big personal debates about philosophy in your role-playing, you know? I'm not sure what you are.
I can go every which way possible with my characters. I've gone the tinkerer. I like my characters to be chameleons. They're fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I actually played a woman only because you talked about it so much. So on World of Warcraft, I tried it. It was different. It was a very different experience.
You see, but playing a video game
is completely different.
Yeah, there's a different. No matter how different a character is from yourself, a role playing character. I think there has to be some element.
I might disagree specifically for Peter, because of which.
I couldn't hear you say that again.
I might disagree specifically for you, Peter, because of the intensity with which Peter plays video games.
But you can't test gender roles on a video game very well.
Yeah.
What are you running around? You just look different. I mean, yeah, how well, are you testing?
But in World of Warcraft, people date. They communicate.
Is Peter dating people online?
No, I wasn't. But
yeah, my
did.
Cousin got divorced, Aaron. Because
no, I'm talking about Peter though.
No.
No, obviously not. But it was interesting to watch how people treat you differently.
Right.
Okay, but are you testing gender roles by being that character? Are you like if I play a woman in a role-playing game, mm-hmm. I'm taking on characteristics of a woman. I have to at least think of kind of what a woman would think like. If you're playing a video game, all you're saying is stay away from me, creep. I'm a guy. I'm a dude. Yeah. Stay away from me, creep. That's you're not a game that boils down
to clicking buttons.
Let's pause for a second because mm-hmm. you're asking a good question, and you are correct. There is a big difference between doing, like, say, a role playing game where we're all face to face playing a role, mm-hmm. and playing something where there's that anonymity and there's more combat to it than interaction.
I don't think you're role playing at all in World of Warcraft, right?
Do you role play
in World of Warcraft, or do you just run around and complete the missions and go cash the stuff?
People role play a little bit. They don't role play to the degree, but absolutely doesn't matter.
There are societies that do role play completely.
Yes, absolutely. People do that, and it depends on who you're gaming with at any given moment.
I always found there was too much of a vacuum. Like the world doesn't provide enough detail for me to role play.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I didn't feel like I ever had a context. You know,
what do you add?
Imagine the difference between that. And in Matt's role-playing game, right, mm-hmm. if you had to bring in a female character there.
Oh, no, yeah. I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there's not a difference. I was just simply saying that there is still some level of role-play in World of Warcraft. Not a huge degree. I'm not saying there's a huge degree. But, Aaron, also keep in mind that you played it for about 2 days and then stopped.
No, but I've played those type of games before.
No, I understand. But, you know,
I mean, being a woman to me is like just...
Also, what I'm saying is, number one, you played it for about 2 days. Mm-hmm. And how you play may not be how everyone plays.
Yeah. Well, I think there are two different types of guy who play female characters. Mm-hmm. It's the guy who makes the female character that they want to have.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know?
That's the one who I usually work with.
And the ones who are more interested in, like, what alternate solutions does this offer? What alternate
why is somebody sitting in your group? Mm-hmm. You sit down, you all roll up characters, and the dude next to you starts playing a woman. Do you go, wonder why he's doing that? What is going to come out of this game? When he makes that decision, is he doing it because he's wishing he was, like, with this woman? Fantasy girl.
That's what I said. It depends on their two different.
Usually, the guys who I've role played with who have done that have been their fantasy girl.
If the first thing they describe to you is their D cup,
yeah,
you mm-hmm. know which guy you're talking about. You know.
Now, one thing I sent a clip.
And in fact, I got to say that Goblins does some very funny stuff with that.
The Goblins web comic.
Oh yeah, the Goblins
comic. Yeah. Very funny. People should definitely check that out.
I'm sorry, but
I was wondering if you read that link. If you read that link about the guy who wrote the article about rape in role-playing, did you read that link I sent you?
No.
Apparently, there have been – I've never even come close to this, but in role-playing games, either to heighten the stakes, the princess gets mm-hmm. carried off, she gets raped or something like that, the game master does it, or the evil character – rape somebody in the game.
Huh.
And can you bring up these type of subjects?
I have been in a group where a female person playing a female character has been raped.
Okay. Huh. So how do you bring that up? How did she react to that?
I'm really curious.
She was an actress mm-hmm. and she separated herself from the character. I don't think it was a new character for her. Mm-hmm. So she hadn't formed any kind of intrinsic bond to the character yet. Mm-hmm. So she kind of describes herself going dead during it.
Mm-hmm. But did she embrace that as part of the storytelling process? Or did she get upset?
She wasn't happy about it.
Right.
It was not a happy role-playing night for her. I'm not going to say that it was. But when she slit the throat of the guy, like, 2 sessions later... Mm-hmm. You know, when she had that opportunity, I think there was something cathartic about it.
And do you feel like that did add to the story and to the heightened her game playing experience?
I think that was probably one of the high moments of role playing with her. Hmm. You know, not the specific event, because none of us were there. She was by herself. But mm-hmm. the stories that came out of it afterwards, But that was an exceptional group. I'm not going to say that that's a great way to introduce someone to any campaign.
And do you feel the Game Master was clear that he could do that storyline with her?
I think it was a tactical error on his part.
Wow.
I don't think he had the relationship or understanding of what type of gamer she was or, you know, any of that stuff. I think it was inappropriate for him to do.
Wow.
You know?
I've never heard of this quite. I didn't think of this type of thing until I read this article. I was like, really?
See, the thing about role-playing and specifically what we're doing, no matter whether it's Dungeons & Dragons and you're crawling through a dungeon or it's a more quote-unquote realistic LARP or whatever, we're always talking about heightened circumstance. And when you're talking about heightened circumstance, you're looking for the sort of key moments that will pick up that heightened circumstance, whether it will be the acceleration of an argument in a bar to a fight, or whether it will be, you know, you've lost the princess and eventually she ends up being raped. You know, it's what that heightened circumstance, which will be the catalyst to then move the action along.
But and keep in mind,
it's also a game.
Exactly.
And it's also supposed to be fun.
Right.
But in a role-playing game, right? For me, for a really good role-playing game, I actually don't view it very differently than I would a good novel.
Exactly. I understand that in a group of people like you, that could be appropriate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But there, I could see, like, for example, let's say we want to play the Western game, and I'm the game master. The engines are coming! The engines are coming! And it's cowboys versus Indians, old school style, and that's how we're going to role-play it. Is that insensitive? Are the cowboys are evil and the Indians are evil and the cowboys are the good guys, and that's what we're... Would you go, Aaron's a little messed up?
I think it depends on the format and the distance from, you know, the events that you're talking about. I mean, that doesn't bother me more because I don't have as many American Indian friends. However, you know, I don't know the issues as well. I'm not as close to the issue.
How about if we're playing the Deep South? I mean, you know,
right.
It's like
exactly.
Civil War.
Do we often play the North?
If everyone was playing caricatures. Like, everyone was playing caricatures.
Like, if I was doing the acting of the black man, it would be a big problem, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Well, and if I was swaggering around like a big dumbass redneck, you know, if everyone's equally prejudiced against,
I don't know, I think it's a good thing. I think it has to do with, like, for example, let's play a Civil War game. Am I going to run it so we're all playing Union?
I think it's about distance because let's take it a step further. Let's say it's a terrorist game, you know, and we can all play Palestinians, or you know, how are you going to portray that?
I'm just saying that. Okay. I think we've gotten to the point where I think we've figured this out.
I couldn't play a Nazi. I couldn't play a Nazi commandant at a concentration camp. I couldn't do it.
Right. Could you, however, play a character like within Rifts, where the characters are pro-human and anti-alien?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Interesting. Well, that would be maybe a good metaphor for reality for me,
you know.
Well, I mean, I think that would be if exploring topics like this, like a novel, is what you would be looking for. Maybe a game master would be clever enough to play the Nazi game and disguise it as sci-fi to test your
that would be halfway in the middle of the campaign, you know, an interesting experience for me. I would love that game master.
Yeah.
All my favorite games have always been things where it's not like, if I can see the twist coming, I'm not going to have a good time. You know,
right.
If you surprise me and you lead me into a place where I start questioning my own actions, that's a good thing. I think that's a huge, like, you know, moment of self-realization. I think that's one of the pinnacles of role-playing.
Maybe role-playing's like poker. I mean, if you sit around and play regular poker with your friends, and sometimes you can play strip poker with other people, but it really depends on the group of people you're playing with.
I'm never playing strip poker with any of you.
Okay.
I think that's a fairly good
analogy.
I'm
okay with that, Don.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
You don't have to answer so quickly.
I didn't.
Because it's kind of hurtful.
You know, you may like to play poker. You may not like to play strip poker. You make your choices about what type of game you're going to play before you go in.
Right. I mean...
You know.
Peter, you hairy bastard. We never know when you were naked.
Yeah, that's...
All right. Anything else about this? I was curious what you guys thought about taboo topics and role playing.
Interesting.
And really, you know, I think we're in a game where I think we might be pushing some of these limits, but I think we're only doing it to explore it.
If you role play, you should think for a moment about what taboo subjects you have. I'm not going to say, you know, we bring it up now, but like, what is it? Is it religion? Is it race? Is it homosexuality? You know, is it blood play? What is your line and why does that exist?
Yeah.
Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
I think you should be clear with all your gaming group exactly how you're going to approach the game. If it's all dwarves and elves, it might be easy, but maybe someone's offended by violence.
I also have to say, I mean, before I could play the character I was playing, I had to say to Matt, you know, I don't know how to do this. And I told him he had to help me with it. He hasn't helped me with it yet, I have to say.
I'm not going to.
He's enjoying it too much.
I think, you know, make your character and commit. You know, see where your character goes.
Have I not committed?
No, I'm just saying, I'm giving that as advice
to
everyone.
So far, I should be committed.
Yes, exactly. You know,
the only bad experiences I've ever had with role-playing is where people backed away.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
All right.
All right.
Let's leave that one for the forums.
Yeah, actually, if anybody has definitely go to our forums and talk about this.
Especially when you tell us that we're all assholes.
Well, you know, again, I think everybody who's role-played maybe has touched upon some of these subjects at least a bit.
I mean, racism, at the very least, is built into Dungeons & Dragons, the most basic, you know, first role-playing game system that most people pick up.
Yep.
Dwarves hate elves. Everyone knows that. That's just the way things work, you know?
Yeah. So if we would love to hear your stories about maybe where you've dabbled on the line, crossed the line, or whether you feel like people were unaware of the line, like, you know, hating dwarves and elves, fine by me. You know, why that's not a problem to anybody, but if you think about it,
it's pretty messed up.
Dwarves are people too.
Bones. Yeah, I was just thinking of that.
Pointy-eared, green-blooded.
I never thought of that until you brought it up, and I was like, weird.
All right.
Shall we move on to the mailbag?
We haven't done mail in a damn long time.
But first, I'm going to do my link.
Oh, you've got a link. Oh.
I've got a link.
Okay.
One of our listeners sent us this link, and I didn't write down their name, so I apologize to you, good listener, who sent in this awesome link, and I am not thanking you for it right now.
The unknown linkist.
We're going to put it up on our website. It's www.bendshire.com. It is a housing complex that's been built in Oregon to look like the Shire.
Yes, that was really interesting.
My God.
And it's beautiful. I want to move there. I love it.
I didn't see any houses underground, though. Like
no, it's more of an architectural thing.
The kids, did you see the Hobbit Hole, the kids' playground?
Yeah.
You can have a Hobbit home for kids that they build into the mound with a circular door and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And the whole community looked really beautiful.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I don't think there's a community there.
Not yet.
It's just one house. But the design for the community looks beautiful.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of lots ready for people to purchase.
They've got one house that's been built.
I loved that house. Little stained glass window all along the length of the house.
Like the elven
very,
stained glass window.
Very hobbity.
Yeah.
So go look at it. Check it out. We'll all retire to Oregon together. We'll live in complete comfort and have root stew.
I told my mom about it. She's really excited to see it. She designs houses. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, theme communities. Next in America.
There is one in Los Angeles. There is a Hobbit house in Los Angeles.
Well, we'll see whether or not. Well, this will be interesting.
Witch's house, too.
I don't know the witch's
crazy.
House.
Yeah.
If this does incredibly well, wouldn't it be interesting if theme communities start becoming sort of an American trademark?
A Star Trek community, just a matter of time.
Yeah.
No, no. God.
We're going to have to hire
Aaron's
children.
Aaron's gone. He's there already.
No.
They'll hire children to stand by all the doors. Shoot.
Yeah.
Shoot.
No.
All right.
I like women.
Hit it, Chewie.
All right. I'll start. Tad Runkle from Animation Station wrote to us. He said it was a 1997 film called Flypaper that features Lucy Liu having sex in an empty swimming pool with snakes.
Yes, that was the one you had questioned about, Peter.
There you go.
That's Flypaper. Aaron, hit it.
Oh. This guy, T, I'm going to skip through some of this, but he recently emailed us. He used to work for Hasbro and was working on the Star Wars team, making some of the action figures. I was just listening to your most recent show, and the guest who was the toy collector was asking Hasbro to produce the B. Arthur doll from the Star Wars Christmas special.
I would buy that. I don't even buy these damn things, and I would buy that.
It reminds me of the time when the Star Wars team was sitting around the table deciding what figures they were going to produce for the next year. Several obscure characters were proposed. Most were shit on by the Hasbro decision makers, i.e. marketing and design managers. I ask him why that was, considering that most Luke re-releases and Han alternatives was just boring and not selling well. One designer basically said they would never cater to fanboys and that they were ruining toys. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that from an insider about the attitude toward toy making. So anyway, thank you, T, for the insider info. Our network is growing.
Let's see. From B, the actress that appeared in Space Rangers was Marjorie Monaghan.
Ah, yes, Marjorie Monaghan.
She also appeared in Babylon 5 and Star Trek Voyager. Here's a link to her fan site if you want a visual reference. www.kelesa.net. Marjorie Monaghan. So check that out.
All right. This is from Josh regarding our 719 show. Awesome show again, guys. What is man? What is humanity? Huge questions discussed in a manner that roves all over the map and spawns hundreds of sub-issues, each of which needs serious consideration. If you're not careful, you're going to start getting philosophy majors writing and quoting Kant and Nietzsche and Sartre and God knows who else.
Great. Awesome.
Woo! and FYI, I am the engineer who worked out the fairy equations for Matt. That Josh. And the one who suggested that you guys should co-write the novel. I'd be happy to try my best to trying to comprehend a cyberpunk high magic fantasy time travel used future white hat, black hat, shades of gray, gods meddling in the affairs of men, science fiction, Tolkien-esque, Python-esque, dark comedy satiric novel that has 200 plus main characters and 500 secondary characters who are all whipshanks in one form or another.
I just
love you.
That.
I love you, Josh. That is, if my head doesn't explode first, which is more likely outcome of said scenario. Oh well. Always happy to lend a helping hand, Josh. P.S. Guys, I thought about buying a Mac, but then I realized how much I like right-clicking.
Ooh. You know, I should just mention the mouse, the Mac does have a right-click mouse now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure
well, of course,
does.
As it continues its constant slide towards being like the PC.
Yeah, really. It's almost there.
It's true, actually. It is
almost there.
It's suddenly heading in that direction.
Pete,
Hey guys, don't know if you got the personal message I sent, but if you check that or my post on the censorship thread, you'll know why I'm leaving. So I post the grand exit, and now I find that there's no delete my membership button I can press. Oops, would you mind doing it for me as I can't? Once again, love the podcast and will keep listening to it. Just saying goodbye to the forum. Thanks, Super Dave.
Okay, so
Super Dave.
We did have some back and forth on the forum.
I missed most of that because I was pretty busy that week.
It's easy right. to catch up. It's a censorship thread.
Yeah. Very interesting, very, very intelligent arguments going back and forth on it, whether or not you disagree. People were thinking out their answers and like that. I disagree personally, but people were really, really coming up with some interesting arguments.
There are some people there are some arguments that are very sort of non-traditional for most of the people that Geeks On...
Correct.
For most of the Geeks On listeners.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately...
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yes.
so Super Dave, found some Blake's of them...
Quite offensive.
A little offensive. Okay. A lot offensive. You know,
a lot
so
offensive.
He's moved... He's left the forums. I wrote to him and was sort of pleading with him to stay because he's very intelligent and makes very good arguments, and it's really our loss...
Yeah, but always has good posts.
Yeah. On the other hand, I also feel like it would be sort of hypocritical to censor a thread on censorship.
Exactly.
So,
Well, not to suck up to our listeners or anything, but I love our forums.
Yeah.
We don't see many dumb posts on our forums at all.
So. Exactly. So, there you are.
Hey guys, I just listened to the interview with George R. R. Martin. It was great. I was wondering if any X-Files fans over there. Any X-Files fans here?
I do love the X-Files, but I was never able to keep up and watch them consistently.
Exactly.
So I lost track of the main storyline.
I was so disappointed by how it ended.
I never got to see the end, and I was always like, oh, this is really going to be the coolest ending ever. And then I just sort of heard this belated groan through the grapevine, and I was like, oh, really? And I was like, all right.
Well, so, this guy, he says, my bro and I made a feature that has William B. Davis in it. Okay. Our flick isn't about the X-Files. We made a fan fiction episode some years back that was an internet cult hit called Graceland. I was wondering if you guys would take a look at it.
Sure.
Hell yeah.
Sure.
That was from Dan.
All right.
Director of The Last Round. We should check that
out.
We'll
totally check it out for you. We'd love to.
And as far as X-Files, there were some awesome freaking episodes of X-Files.
Oh, genius. Yeah. Just genius.
I think that the went on too long, and they just didn't have the steam. They just didn't have the steam for the length of the series they had.
It's so unfortunate when good series go bad. I mean, it's like I saw the end of The Alias show, and I was just disappointed.
I think Alias jumped the shark season 3, though.
Yes, it did. It absolutely did. You know, and then they made some choices to go away from their Rimbaldi storyline,
which was a huge mistake.
And then they came back to it, but by that point, it just had lost its flavor.
I think I know television is big business. I get it, but when series end at the correct time, you've got
MASH.
MASH was like 13 years. I don't know if it ended the correct time. But, you know, like, for example, a Star Trek usually goes, six, seven seasons, and then they end now, granted, they've got another one up.
See, I say Babylon 5, you know, 5 seasons, and people are still chomping at the bit for more.
Right. But they ended
it. But that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
And hopefully some of these shows that we're watching now will end at the correct time. I hope Battlestar Galactica ends when it needs to end.
I had a friend from Brazil, and we were talking about how they do serials versus how we do serials.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was saying was that a Brazilian serial always is intended to run a certain amount of time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They have a set story arc.
Weeks, yes.
And so that's it. They're done.
Well, they have those little novella things, right?
Yeah. The telenovelas. Telenovelas, yeah.
Yeah, all
which
those.
We're now getting.
Yay. Yeah. But British shows do it.
Yep.
I mean, some of the best shows have like 2 or 3 seasons.
Absolutely.
And they're done.
Yeah, but here everything tries to go 5 seasons because if they go 5 seasons, they hit syndication.
Yeah.
Syndication.
Oh, they try to go more than 5 years. They try to go at least 5
Well, but
years.
They're aiming for 5.
Right.
So if it's something that's got maybe the staying power of 2 or 3, they're still going for 5.
Yeah.
And they're doing it because that's where the big money is.
Yep.
You know?
Red Dwarf.
Let's see. This is from Dan. Hey, Dan. I think this is a different Dan, though. Hey, Geeks On. Don, I was listening to the podcast about brain wipes, and in particular the Babylon 5 episode, Walking Through Gethsemane.
Gethsemane.
Gethsemane. Yeah. Gethsemane. I think that there was an excellent example to choose and an excellent Bab 5 episode. And at the end, when Sheridan had to forgive the man who killed the monk, it really touches on the core of human morality. Does he forgive the man as the monks taught, or hate him for exacting his revenge? Love your podcast, by the way. I listen to you every day and have to say your episode 3 remake makes me laugh my ass off. Well, thank you, Dan. But
he has no ass now.
Dan, no ass, the man.
This one really surprised me, and I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Hi, guys. I'm Yossi, an Orthodox rabbi and educator in Jerusalem, and I am a geek.
And I think he has a podcast.
Yes.
I listened to his podcast the other day.
I love your show. Over the past month, during this little war we've been having, I've been raiding the archive heavily. It's a relief to listen to something which is not filled with casualty lists and damage reports. Fortunately, Jerusalem is not in range of Hezbollah's missiles, so we have not been stuck in bomb shelters for 5 weeks like the people in northern Israel, but it has been a very stressful time. Thanks for making it a little easier. I and my wife, Yael, definitely a nerd, not a geek, have a little podcast of our own. Rabbi Joe in Jerusalem.podomatic.com, but it deals more with politics and religion, and sometimes you just want to hang out with the people who fondly remember Commodore 64s and the Galaxy Rangers. I love the Galaxy Rangers.
I love Commodore 64.
Big 20, baby. Big 20.
It's all about Archon on the Commodore 64.
Oh, my God. Archon. Anyway, he says he doesn't enjoy the video game component. He hasn't played anything seriously since he was a kid in New York. But we have convinced him that he really needs to check out Firefly and Babylon 5 and maybe even give Farscape another chance. To conclude, 2 observations that I've been dying to share. 1, Enterprise failed not because it was too original, but because it was an absolute retread of the original Star Trek.
Yeah, yep. I've heard that.
Yep.
Of the original one.
Yeah.
All of them.
A swashbuckling boyish captain who never stays on the ship, a Vulcan science officer, a Southerner department head who's best buds with the captain and bickers, a Brit constantly announcing that the ship's about to blow up, and either an Asian guy at the helm or a black woman at communications, or a black guy at the helm and an Asian woman at communications.
There you go.
The climax of the original Star Wars trilogy was when Luke discovered that the man he regards as his father's murderer is actually his father. The climax of the prequel trilogy, at the Bubble Opera, is when Anakin discovers that the man he regards as his father figure, Palpatine, is actually his father's murderer, since Darth Pelagius, Palpatine's master, created him in Shmi's womb. This is a deep and thoughtful point, so Lucas must have done it by accident.
God.
I love that. Rock on, geeks. Yossi. P.S. Love the trans-spiritual condemnation drive.
Oh, I love that, Aaron. That was freaking genius.
Here we go.
Hey, Yossi, stay safe out there.
Yeah, man.
Tara Layton writes, Hi, geeks. Just thought I'd send you an email and let you know the depth of your listening audience. I'm not a geek, I don't think. I don't play video games. Of Tolkien books, I've only read The Hobbit. I don't really like or read sci-fi. I'm not a fan of Star Trek, although, like everyone else in the world, I did like this original Star Wars movies. I would say the geekiest thing I have ever done was let a friend drag me to a showing of an extended version of a Lord of the Rings movie, although I don't remember which one it was.
Nope, not a geek.
And sitting in the theater listening to the conversation the movie goes around me, I definitely felt like I'd arrived on another planet. I guess what I'm... More than anything, I guess what I...
She sounds like somebody a geek would date.
I guess what I am more than anything is a talk radio junkie. I soak it up and just can't seem to get enough. Not knowing about the world of podcasting until a few weeks ago, I was resigned to years of listening to political or financial radio talk shows continuously. When I recently moved to England, I turned to iTunes to supply my talk radio fix. About a week ago, I stumbled onto Geeks On. It's only taken me a few days, but I've managed to listen to the entire archive of podcasts on iTunes, and I'm now tracking with you in the present day. For the first 10 episodes or so, I thought role-playing was something like a costume party, where everyone showed up in their fantasy garb. Anytime role-playing books or aids were alluded to in your podcast, I thought these were maybe historical books showing what armor looked like to aid in the realism of the costumes.
This is what it is like if you role-play with Dawn.
She puts a little cute smiley face here. My husband, who does play heroes, by the way, finally explained it to me. Anyway, I really dig you guys. I love your topics and find your conversations very interesting. Despite your worries that you may have offended someone, I find your group dynamic and very respectful of each other. Oh, and by the way, on top of not being a geek, I'm also a Republican with a libertarian slant and a Scientologist. Yes. Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
I cringe the first few times politics or religion, and specifically Scientology, were brought up on your show. As such a new religion, Scientology is often misunderstood. But I'm proud of you for being able to discuss it and not completely bash it, as some do when a subject or idea is foreign to them. Thanks for the great podcast. I'm only sorry I can't do my marathon listening. I'll have to settle for a show a week. Your non-geek listener, Tara.
Scientologists, rabbis, Lutheran ministers.
Mormons.
Oh,
yeah. Oh,
we have Mormons?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow, I'm so going to get
hate mail this episode. Kicked.
We got them all. Okay, I have one more that's related.
Well, we haven't
actually insulted Mormons yet, have we? So
no.
We're just bringing them into the fold.
Yeah. It wasn't me this time.
I want to know, how did she stumble? I mean, there's thousands of podcasts on iTunes, and she's not a geek. How did she happen to listen to the first? Like, what did she look up? That's totally bizarre. Okay, I have one last one that's kind of related. Hello, I was wondering if you could answer something for me. That would be, am I a geek? My close friends say I am, but a lot of other people tell me that I'm nothing close to a geek. Okay, we get lots of these type of emails. He then lists the things that he does. I don't know if you're a geek. But we get a lot of this, but you might as well jump on board because we're taking over the world. And if you want a slice of the pie when we start divvying it up, you might want to jump, get a little piece of it.
Yeah, I mean, he says it on the Sermon of the Mount, the geek shall inherit the earth.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He did.
So
there was a typo in some versions, I think.
Right, yeah.
Join us as we conquer! So if you think you are, just a little bit, at least pretend.
If you're questioning whether or not you're a geek, there's a good chance that you're a geek. Just saying.
And Zach, you are a geek. He also asks, he was planning on buying a Mac. Any suggestions? Again, there's not a lot of choices with a Mac besides whether you want to go mobile.
I have a suggestion. Buy a PC.
If you want to go mobile, if you want to have a smaller Mac, if you want to have a big, powerful Mac, those are the three choices, and you can check that out on the website.
I have one last email also from Rabbi Joe. Yossi. Hello, Yossi. Anyway, just listen to your 666 show, and I must say that this, like most of the Book of Revelation, is Christian all the way, not Jewish. The word Torah in Hebrew adds up to 611, and adding the first two commandments at Sinai, the ones in the first person, you come up with 613 mitzvot, commandments, in total, which is very significant in Judaism. The Jewish year, 5666, was exactly 100 years ago, but unless the universe consists of the Bay Area, there was no apocalypse then. The whole idea of Satan is as a rebellious angel, not Jewish. Ha-Satan, literally the adversary, with a definite article, is the prosecuting angel in the heavenly court. But that is his job, just as it is Raphael's job to heal people. There is, however, an authentic Jewish tradition that this world will end by the year 6000, and the Messianic era will begin. That gives us, at most, 234 years. Global warming should finish us off by then, right? Rock on, geeks. P.S. Have you seen the 4400 yet? It's everything you wanted X-Men to be, but it wasn't. Each season is better than the previous one. Have any of you seen 4400 yet?
Not at all.
No. It's one of those
I watched the first season.
Oh, you did see it?
I did. I watched the first season.
It seemed like a good idea.
The premise was excellent. Mm-hmm. The premise was excellent. And the execution in the first season was adequate.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't wow me, but I thought it had potential.
Mm-hmm.
So if Rabbi Joe was saying it's growing up, I'm willing to see season two if it's better than season one.
I do believe I heard someone say the second season was better, but I'm not going to swear by it.
Okay.
The premise is excellent. For those of you who are not familiar with the 4400, mm-hmm. to sum it up real quick, it's about a bunch of people between 1932, I think, through 2004. And all these people just disappear in unexplained ways. In 2005, all of a sudden, all of these people show up on the shore of a lake in Washington State. They're from all around the world. They have no common link to each other, and none of them have any memory of what happened. So it's about this reassimilation of those 4,400 people who have no idea where they've been, as they all start discovering that each of them have something unique about them now that they've come back.
Interesting.
See, Heroes, which is a show that's coming up, kind of reminds me of that a little bit. And I feel like because Heroes I can start from the beginning.
I think the difference is, though, that Heroes seems to be going for like a big budget feel, mm-hmm. whereas the 4400 is definitely much more kind of a smaller,
mundane,
psychological, mundane, what I've seen of it.
Right. You
know? It's very thinky. And I liked that.
Yeah, maybe I'll rent the first season.
I read the first comic that Heroes, the first episode, is going to be based on. And I was like, wow, this is going to be lots of Bruckheimer-y special effects the whole way through.
Was the comic out already?
Yeah, no, the
you
comic.
You read it too.
Yeah.
We got it at E3.
We got it at E3, yeah.
Mm. Interesting. Okay.
That was another episode of Geeks On.
Big mailbag that we emptied.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Excellent. Well,
that was only the skim.
On a personal note, thank you to all of you who sent in lovely little congratulatory emails to me about my new job. It's going great.
You know,
I've never
gotten a personal Geeks On email.
Really?
I've never got
one. Are you serious?
I've never got one to Aaron@geeksOn.com. That's Aaron@geeksOn.com.
Okay, so write Aaron. He's feeling lonely.
You've all gotten personal emails?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to say thank you
what
to everyone who sent
hell?
Me congratulatory emails.
I think
emails
they're intimidated by your awesome geeky.
You guys get on, this is gonna help!
And I apologize for not returning your emails, but I've been a little swamped, so.
That's cool.
Yeah, cool.
Excellent.
Alrighty.
That
well,
was
hope
it.
You guys have a good geek week.
Have a great geek week.
Bye.
Do well.